Hi, everybody. Welcome back to This Week on Channel 9. I think we have some cool stories for you. We have a lot of cool news. I've been gone for a while.
I've been gone for a while, too.
Well, I was doing some traveling. There was some cool events that we were doing at Moscow and Kiev. Dev Day in Kiev was super fun that we did that.
Yeah.
So I'm sad I missed some of the episodes.
And we have MVP Summit here.
We did have the MVP Summit. That was pretty fun. We had a lot of people here, a lot of smart people. A lot of people smarter than us.
Really smart.
It was exciting to talk to all those people. I learned a lot. It was good. For those that don't know, we have a summit every summit. All the MVPs come down, they meet with all the engineering folks, they meet with a lot of folks from Microsoft, we have sessions, we have dinners, we have all kinds of partnerships that we do, and it's actually super fun. I think we learn so much.
Yeah, we share what we do, they share what they do, and it's kind of a good thing to know what they need from us, because they kind of work with Microsoft technologies, and they most valuable people working with the Microsoft technologies, and vice versa. We say, oh, these are our plans, so you can understand what we're going to do.
Exactly. This is pretty fun. Well, that was last week, so enough for last week. I think we should talk about what's going on this week. I think the biggest thing that was actually announced on Thursday, which is today our time, for you probably sometime last week, maybe if you're watching next week. If you're watching it tomorrow, so
let's talk about it for 10 minutes.
Anyway, so Terry Myerson announced that we're shipping the second update, the biggest update, the first update actually.
The first update, Threshold 2,
that was the code name, of Windows. So now the Windows desktop devices will get the biggest major update since Windows 10 was released. There's some awesome cool stuff coming out. Everything's getting updated. There's all new Cortana features. There's new updates for Edge. There's all kinds of new stuff. So there's a whole blog post. If you're interested to know what's new, definitely check out the blog post by Terry Myerson. But what's interesting is we also have a new blog post.
By Mike Ybarra.
By Mike Ybarra, yes. Want to talk about that one?
Yeah, that's blog post about actually a new Xbox One experience. So it's also a big update for Xbox One. We have a completely new experience, and like it just updated.
What's cool about this though, this is Windows 10 now. So this is the same core that's running on desktop. It's not running on an Xbox One officially. So it's an official update to the Xbox One. It's running the same core. So we're surely on the way to having a combined core. That's just super cool. And most people don't know this. I'm not sure if we can share this, but it's actually the same build number. As the desktop version.
So it's TH2.
It's TH2, so this is a Threshold 2 as well. So it's the same build number. So it's cool to see that we have the same build number of the core running on Xbox and desktop now.
And if you are an insider, a Windows insider, that you notice that all the phones on Windows 10 also got the same kind of build for them. So it's basically...
Already they haven't. They will get that built eventually. Yeah.
But I think for the test ring, I believe that they're waiting.
So Terry Myerson said that we're going to get a lot of devices starting soon. They will start getting this update as well.
Oh, cool.
Which is pretty cool. Now, with Xbox also, we've announced this before, in many of their gaming conferences. But Terry also announced, actually not Terry, Mike Ybarra also announced that now it's official that you can play Xbox 360 games backwards compatibility on Xbox One.
Awesome.
And we have a list of 104 Xbox 360 games that work on Xbox One, which brings the number of total Xbox One games well above 400, which is increasing the number by 25%+. That's a huge number of games that you can now play on your Xbox One.
And if you ask why 104, I have no idea why.
I think that's how many they could get. I don't know. I think everyone's thinking about that. Anyway, talking about big announcements, I want to talk about a cool blog post by Limin Zhu. He's talking about ASM.js. Now, we've talked about ASM.js before.
Yeah.
And then we've supported it in Edge for a while now, I think.
Yeah.
And then it's talking about how ASM.js is good, but they actually built a game of chess using a famous algorithm, and then they wrote the algorithm to kind of play itself. So one version of it was built on top of ASM.js. The other one was built on just regular JavaScript. And they always wanted to see which one wins and which one do you think won.
Of course.
And ASM.js.
This algorithm is very computationally expensive. So that's why they use it for giving it a try to ASM.js.
Which is it's super cool. It's kind of the low-level JavaScript that people want to get the performance at, so performance gain out of it.
Yeah, and it's very important. You know that this kind of LLVM thing for translation from C++ to JavaScript exists already like for years. Mm-hmm. But SMGS, it's really what makes it faster. Fast enough to run in a browser so you can basically do real 3D games with WebGL in your browser. For example, like Unity supports WebGL translation, so if you made a 3D game with Unity, they can translate everything to JavaScript. And the way they do it, they translate to C++ first, and then they translate it to JavaScript and WebGL. And now it's fast enough in Edge. Cool. With SMGS.
Awesome.
And talking about C++, by the way, if you're a C++ developer, and even if you're not C++ developer, you know this go-to definition thing when you do a source code in Visual Studio, or...
That doesn't always work.
Yeah, or final references about a certain kind of variable or function. With C++, it's really complicated to implement this feature because C++ doesn't have metadata support by default. So we had a special kind of format and engine project database. With the latest update of Visual Studio, we actually have improved this functionality, so it just works faster. And the guy who...
Gabriel.
Yeah. Described the actual improvements and how it works and why it's cool. If you're a C++ developer,
It's a Channel 9. It's a new VC++ Bytes 3-1 video.
Oh, I didn't know.
So yeah, definitely check it out. You know, it's awesome. Now, speaking of cool things happening in Microsoft, I don't know his name. I can't say his name. I think I'm going to try
Jacek.
This. Is it Jacek?
Jacek yes.
Zerwonka. I hope that's right. But he has a cool blog post on MSDN blogs on talking about what's going on when we do engineer systems. Mm-hmm. Now, Microsoft, there's, he says, about 30,000 plus people that work on code directly on day-to-day job. And then we have a lot of engineering systems from going from one product to the other product. And he talks about giving us an insight of how do we work on code and how do we work on internal business policies and how do we decide what gets to build or how we get to build something. So he even does this through some examples. So he talks about how we designed the local cache in OneNote. You know, how was that designed? What decisions made there? Or how are we running Exchange online? Like, how do we do that? Like, what are the architecture changes that we have to do there? Things about what are the general engineering processes that we have in Microsoft.
Yeah, and like including like build system. For example, we used to have a Windows build system. It's huge, it builds a huge operating system. But with this new kind of model, when we ship updates frequently with new features and everything, we realized we needed to redesign the engineering system to make everything faster and more flexible, more agile, if you want. So that was a big redesign of engineering. It's a good thing that we're going to share this with the rest of the world.
Yeah, every time we make a change like that, it's a huge amount of work, and people don't realize how we're still going through some of the changes right now.
Still.
I mean, one of the changes, big changes we did was we changed from our internal version control system to Git in many different projects. And there's an example that Jacek goes through for Azure. Of how they went to Git and how they're doing everything in Git now. Which, I mean, if you're trying to do that yourself on a big scale, this is, I think, great learnings here. It's pretty cool.
Yeah, again, talking about new things. You know that we recently announced and started shipping and everything Surface Pro 4 and Surface Book. Mm-hmm. These devices have very good cameras.
And they have some new cameras in there too, not just regular cameras.
Yeah, and of course it has a brilliant rear-facing camera. It has a very good front-facing camera for doing your Skype stuff or something like this. But it also has a Windows Hello face authentication front camera, so you can do a Windows Hello authentication without entering your password, just using your face, right? This blog post basically describes all these capabilities and how they designed it, how they implemented it in hardware, right? It's a cool blog post. If you like hardware, if you like good hardware, you're going to read it. right?
No, it's good. I mean, it talks about also about the decisions they had to make about choosing the right hardware and everything. So, which is it's a great, good blog post by the people that actually created this.
Yeah, and from face authentication to emotion detection on your face.
Project Oxford. Yes.
Yeah, this is big.
So Project Oxford, for those that don't know, Project Oxford is it's a beta project that's happening in Azure right now that supports many different, I guess you can put natural ways to interact with computers and gives you as a service that you can use within your applications. An example of this is the vision APIs that we have enabled that can detect faces, they can detect features on different faces. We also have audio and speech recognition APIs. We have language understanding API. So there's many, a lot of these natural user interfaces that you can use within your application.
Yeah, the big thing, we have vision, it's a part of vision API that we can label scenes like with certain objects on that. So that's a big thing.
So a lot of these APIs keep growing over time, and then we keep adding more and more stuff. And all this is, of course, is powered by analytics and machine learning in the back end. But, and then we keep adding more and more stuff that we've done through training. And one of the things we did is emotion detection. I mean, that's cool. Come on, what am I doing right now?
I'm happy.
So it's awesome. It gives you a whole array of what emotion it thinks that the face is doing. So it's 25% happy, 35% angry. Mm-hmm. You look something else.
Mean.
So it's a cool, you can use this within your applications today. It's a REST API that you just send out an image and tells you what the faces are in that image, which is pretty cool.
You can make a lot of fun about it. And I'm not talking about actual business solutions, about motion detection.
Yeah, or you can do for customer service. You know, you want to train your customer service people to be happy, and you can, you know, reward them if they're always happy and smiling with their people. I don't know, you can create all kinds of solutions with this. And then Project Oxford, folks use Project Oxford to some cool little projects. There was a new project that was just created called MyMustache.net.
Yeah, Matt Velosa from our team actually was part of.
Yeah, we've talked about Matt a lot here, and he's creating a lot of projects. He also created the Twins Are Not project as well. So it's a whole series of awesome, cool projects that they've been working on. Did you try this, MyMustache.net?
Yes. I had tried it with Matt weeks ago.
Which is pretty cool. You can even draw a mustache on your face. So he knows where your nose is and your mouth is, and he can just draw the mustache on you.
Yeah, going down to the metal, it's actually all about face detection and face feature detection, where your eyes are, where your nose are.
It's using Project Oxford and behind the scenes.
Yeah, talking about cool things and all sort of innovations, HoloLens. We already talked about computer science kind of academic program for HoloLens, and we several months ago we announced this actual academic program for institutions. So if you are at, like, let's say a university doing computer science thing, you had a chance to nominate your project, like describe it and everything, and we finally announced award recipients, a sort of winners.
Finally.
Yeah. So basically, these are projects that is gonna get the award for doing a HoloLens project, and moreover, these people are gonna get HoloLens eventually.
And the award is not that small. It's $100,000 they're gonna get as a grant. So they get a grant to build their project.
On HoloLens, which is huge.
It will involve HoloLens, yes.
So those projects are really good. I like the way they position the projects. I like the way, I like what they're gonna do, right?
It's all about research. It's all about seeing what is possible we can do with this new device that's been created and this new capabilities that device has.
Yeah, because you always do, when you do your research, you always kind of rely on what you have in terms of sensors, cameras, the software capabilities, hardware capabilities. And when you have this new device, you should kind of rethink what you do, and you can do more. So
I think a lot of the new technology innovations that we have all came from academic research first. Even the HoloLens, a lot of the technology that's not HoloLens, it comes from academic research and then, you know, evolved to become a commercial product. So enabling this and creating, it's cool to see what kind of new technologies we can have 10, 20 years from now, even maybe even sooner than that.
Exactly. Eventually, they're going to be productized.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Cool. I think it's that time of the show. I think it's pick of the week. So I'm going to go with my pick of the week first. This is actually by one of my coworkers, David Katu. But yes, he has written a blog post on how to manage, successfully manage open source project. Now, if he's writing this, you know that it's going to be good and it's going to be successful. If, for those that don't know, David is managing several open source projects, very successful open source projects. The, probably the most successful one is Babylon.js, mm-hmm. that's being used by, I think, thousands of developers around the world. And he also has Vorlon.js, and he also has other projects that he's managing. So he goes through the process of what he had to go through to manage, you know, pushing this on open source, how to manage requests from users, how to manage, you know, prioritizing your features, and how to be successful in doing all that stuff. So for anybody doing any kind of open source work or managing open source project, this is great learnings there. Yeah. Because he's gone through this, he's been doing this for years, and it can help anybody to be successful like he has been.
Yeah, and I really trust this this experience, because when he first started Babylon.js, It took some time for this project to be successful, mm-hmm. to be kind of well known, and in that kind of WebGL area. With Vorlon.js, it was just like a skyrocketed thing. It was like, okay, yeah. Here's the project, and now like everybody's talking about Vorlon.js.
Yeah, he learned a lot from his projects, and he's using that, and now you can use it yourself.
Cool. So let's move to my pick of the week. I was choosing actually between two things, and then I realized why I don't use both of them. As like my picks of the week,
so that's cheating, but okay.
Yeah, that's cheating, but why not? I'm a co-host. So first, both of them actually are about doing research and doing machine learning. But the first project is actually about open sourcing distributed machine learning toolkit. Microsoft Research Asia has this distributed learning toolkit for a while. If you ever done any machine learning things like neural networks, you know that things like, for example, training neural network, it's just a huge thing in terms of computation power. You better to have a distributed system with a lot of machines, so you can parallelize your work and just make it faster. Like for training, let's say conventional neural network for things like Project Oxford does, it takes weeks. With a distributed system, you can basically make it faster, and you can talk about not weeks but days. That's a huge step. And now the source code is available, so you can go and use this on on your, let's say, data center. And talking about data center, actually we used to have this data center with what we call Project Catapult. Mm-hmm. It's for accelerated machine learnings. So basically, they have a data center with a bunch of servers. But those servers don't just have CPUs. They also have FPGA modules. And you can accelerate your machine learning task on those modules. And now we make it available for academic researchers. And that's important, because if you're, let's say, like a professor or a student in computer science, and you want to do machine learning stuff, again, as I already said before, you need to train your machine learning modules, and it takes a lot in terms of computational power. These guys can accelerate it with you, and you can nominate your project. Then eventually you get access to this data center, and you can do your research on this cool project in the University of Texas.
Awesome. Cool. Well, thanks everyone for joining. Hope you enjoyed the show. If you have any comments, or if you just want to say hi, or just please use the comments below. We'll see you again next week, hopefully with some even cooler stories. So hopefully have a great weekend. Or if you already had the weekend, I hope you had a great weekend. So thank you. Well,
thank you for being with us. Have fun.
Thank you.